Hello, I'm Gui.
I'm Afif.
And I'm Long.
And you're listening to Copy Overflow, a podcast about software engineering. So, we had a chat on like what are the topics we want to do in the future, and we kind of somehow came down to the decision to do like a three-part episode on like each of our career journey so far. I don't think it's meant to like boast about our career. I don't think we, I mean, personally, I don't have anything to boast about. A lot of people keep telling me my journey is interesting, but I don't.
It is.
Okay, fine, it is. Afif draw the short straw and he's going first for our first part of this. So we won't do this back to back. So there'll be like an episode in between. So you won't hear all our journeys back to back. But yeah, there'll be an episode in between three of us. So Afif will start first. And right before we started recording, we were talking about, oh, how to get started, how to get started into this, right? And then Afif was like going into storytelling mode already and telling about some of his experiences. So Afif, maybe you can straight away jump into that, like what we're telling us, continue on there. Of course, give more context as well, like start from the beginning.
Yeah, so I started 2014. So that was my first job. So this has been 8 years now. I did a degree in computer science. So I kind of got lucky because I realized that I like programming very early. When I was in Form 2, which I was 14, I was already doing like Flash programming and like, you know, Macromedia Flash, now Adobe Flash.
Action script.
It's not there anymore, right?
That's a throwback. I mean, Flash is dead already, right?
It's really dead. Like, it's not maintained anymore.
If you guys don't know that, you're probably too young. Started with Flash and then HTML. And then when I was 16, I was doing web programming with PHP. So I was tinkering a lot with CMSs, PHP Fusion, WordPress, you know, all that. So I was doing that. My ambition was to become a doctor. And I remember when I was in last year of my high school, I told my parents I don't want to become a doctor anymore. I wanted to do computer science, and that's what I did. Took a degree in computer science, and then I got my first programming job in 2014. Now it's been 4 companies, and there's a lot of things I've learned and a lot of people I've known, like these 2 people. I was lucky because I knew early on like what I wanted to do, and not many people actually was afforded that. So a lot of people actually, even when they did their degree, they actually don't know what they like, right? You know, like what to do. I got that very, very early. Like I was still a teenager and I still like it until now. I can't imagine myself retiring. So like, that's how I love it.
Yeah, I can totally understand what you're talking about. Like, even if you retire, you probably still want to like code some janky stuff that you can use and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, I probably won't be working for a company anymore, but I will still be programming. I don't know. Maybe if I'm gardening at that point, I'll probably do some IoT stuff to like auto water my...
And a CICD for your gardening stuff.
measure temperature, pH of soil.
Yeah, I something like that. But yeah, so that was lucky. And then I think the people that I've known from working in these companies as well, I think that is another part of my luck, I think. Because last episode, we were talking about interviews, right? But there is so little you can know from interviews. You won't know your colleagues, like you won't know your managers, like how they will be doing one-on-ones with you or how they will be supportive of you. I think the most impactful engineering manager that I had was in my first job. He was my engineering manager at my first company. I was still growing. I still have a lot of things to learn, like a lot of things I don't know.
You're fresh out to the job market, basically, right? Fresh grad and all. So yeah.
Yeah, fresh out. Yeah. So the industry is really different from the university life, right? I think we covered that in the episode with Felicity.
Yeah.
Like as I was graduating, for example, I wanted to become like all-rounder where I can do desktop apps, mobile apps, and also web apps. And then I joined the first company, which is a web app, a SaaS company, basically. And then I realized that web itself is a vast environment, right? So I didn't know a lot. And then I decided, okay, I'm not going to do desktop and mobile anymore. I'm just going to focus on web. I think there are probably 2 advice that I think are the most prominent to me until now. So the first one was, this was back when I was still like not even 1 year into the company. And I like programming a lot, right? So I found a company that I liked, but I was trying to do part-time with it. So the company is doing something that I personally can relate with. So it's a like a donation company. you know, like helping people, all that kind of stuff.
A charity, that kind of...
Yeah, it's a charity kind of company. But then my first company was also kind of charity. It's just that it's not serving the Malaysian market. So it was serving the American market, right? So there are still some gray area there. I probably couldn't work part-time with a company that's doing kind of the same thing as my day job. So I went to my manager and asked, like, can I actually work part-time with them? Will I have any problem? He said something like, think about this. You are already doing 8 hours of programming in the day. So don't do another 4 hours of programming at night. So he was asking me to improve on other stuff and do other things. And in the end, I didn't take that job. So I had free time, and then I became like a very active volunteer in one of the education kind of organization. And that actually helped improve a lot of my soft skills, right? So it's I had to teach little kids, which is good for mentoring, I guess.
There's a moment of doubt.
Are you saying junior engineers are like little kids? No, I'm joking. Let me help you here. Is it because you can kind of learn the skill on like breaking down more complex concepts and make it easier to explain like I'm 5 kind of thing? It helps build that skill, right?
Yeah, so it also deals with different kind of attitudes between students. And then also, because I was an active volunteer, I have been like, you know, active in meetings, throwing out ideas, debating ideas, solving problems. All those things actually come back to your day-to-day work. And that was the feedback that I got from my manager. Like, you actually really did improve a lot from joining that organization. I speak up a lot more. I contribute more. So had I not get like a manager that's like that, I probably wouldn't have.
Yeah, like because of what he said, that
timeline might not happen.
But it also it also helped in your personal life, right? Because that's where you met your significant other as well. So,
right, that's true.
What, you didn't think of that till this point?
You forgot?
I mean, that's not probably as impactful to my career. We're talking about my career, right? So that one was an advice on individual performance, right? So the other advice that I still remember from him about team's performance, right? So how do you know that your engineering team is performing? So he said this. He said that in every high-performing engineering team, the product will always be the bottleneck. So any tickets that come to us, we can deliver it quick to the point that we're just waiting for product. So usually the customer side, that's actually...
Is that even possible? Like, can you code faster than product have ideas?
No. Product, a good product team will not just give you ideas. They will actually test it, right? So figure out how to do experiments, analytics, all those kind of things.
Yeah, that's true. They will kind of refine kind of.
So there's a lot more process going on, right? So like, for example, if you're doing B2B stuff, like you have to talk to like big organizations, that take time, you know, like, so because your customers have like hierarchies and procedures and ISOs and all that kind of things.
Bureaucracy.
Yeah, bureaucracies. Yeah, they have their process. So they'll be slow. And here, engineering team will just be not having anything to do, which is also kind of good because that slack time will actually be useful for you to do continuous improvements.
Innovations.
Tech dev and whatnot, right?
Tech dev, all that.
Also, I had like 2 very stupid jokes. First one was, Afi was saying like how you know your engineering team is performing. Like, you put them on the stage, then they'll perform.
Oh my god.
Oh, ooh. Yeah, sure.
Anyway, another thing was like, I've also met like high performing bug producing teams. They produce a highly performant in producing bugs. That's a very lame joke as well. Anyway, continue on.
But I guess I'm trying to understand like what was the perspective from what Afif described is the engineering team is sort of relatively more efficient compared to product or other teams in a way, is it?
It's not that the product team is not efficient. It's just that they are dealing with, there are a lot more stuff. Like you want to introduce a new feature, you have to design, you have to get customer feedback, you have to get the stakeholders feedback. So that those things are slow. So
I think I get it. Like, it's because there's no blocker in the implementation of what the product asks of the engineering because engineering team is so good. So everything that product just throw in, engineering will complete it and then come back to waiting to product. In a way.
Like there's less feature work.
Yeah, that's what I meant. let's say you have a meeting, direct meeting with the customer. I've worked like that. I've worked in a company where you actually directly meet with the customer, with the client, right? So I've experienced that where, you know, like the current ticket is not yet done, but you're already meeting the client, and the client has a lot more features to actually give you. Feature development takes longer because the code base was not as easy to work with, well maintained, or there's a lot of bugs, so you have to spend a lot of time dealing with bugs or regressions, like continuous regression is not there or something like that. So I think that I would consider not a high performing team.
I don't quite agree that that would be an indicator, because that sign that you, the scenario, the situation you talk about can happen because of many factors. Right, it can be overinvest in engineering. I mean, I don't want to say that it's like overinvest in engineering. What are you talking about? or underinvest in product, or there's no clear product vision, not roadmap vision, where the product want to go, or there's a lot of other external factors that which is out of control of product, could be environmental. I wouldn't want to take that as an indicator of a high end performance engineering team per se. Like in that case, I would say like that could be controversial, but like more proactive measures taken by engineering, as in looking out at the technical sceneries.
Yeah, it could be like a whole entire episode on just us arguing about this.
Yeah, I feel like we could spend the whole episode on this.
Yeah, I think all of us have some overlapping areas in what we think are good performing teams, but also we kind of have our own distinct thoughts about it as well, coming from each of our perspective. But anyway, right, we get back from this tangent to Afif's career.
I also met a lot of great engineers at my first company. And I think these people are, you know, senior engineers that actually left a lot of impact in my career as well. As a junior developer who doesn't know stuff, right? Like, if you come in, you are going to have to learn a new stack, learn a new framework, you know, all that. But then that actually is the easier part. Like, so these people are not tied to a specific technology. They were actually doing C#. The company was using Ruby. So, like, once you go a bit higher, changing language is not the worst problem that you will have. The problem is a lot more like, you know, like what I was mentioning just now, like well-maintained code base, or like architecture, or process improvements, workflows, how you troubleshoot. So those things come with experience, and they are not specific to any kind of language. I think that's what I've become. Like now I probably do mainly JavaScript and TypeScript. My current work is actually still doing Ruby. But I do believe that there are more important things than the language itself. There are these fundamental stuff, basically. So I remember there's one guy who actually came in and solved like one intermittent issue. So this is intermittent issue that happens only on a very, very, very specific scenario. No one can solve that before he came in. He can solve that, and he was doing C# before. He wasn't even doing Ruby. And like his debugging skill is what's important, and can travel through languages and like timeless, rather than, you know, your Ruby skills or something like that.
In a way, what I'm getting is good software engineering practices are more important than the language or framework they're on, right?
Yeah. There's probably not much benefit from trying every new framework out there. Just improving your craft, like the fundamental ones, you know, problem solving, communication. It's kind of ironic because like software engineering is actually very human, a very human career, you know. If you want to avoid talking to people, don't become software engineers, which is kind of ironic.
You can be a programmer. You just write code. You don't engineer software.
Yeah, but you're not going to be a very good...
Yeah, because you still have to talk to like product managers and your team on like how to implement and whatnot, right? It's the inverse, right? I'm not sure about both of you, but when I join, it's like, oh great, I don't have to talk to people. I just work with machines, right? And then it's like, now it's like, oh, it's totally different. I have to like Slack so many people, text so many people in Jira tickets. I had to write extensively. Sometimes you have to like herd cats, right? You have to like get all the stakeholders in one room, and get some engineers, and get the product manager, get the designer in one room, and like, so what are we gonna do about this?
Yep. So I didn't know that company will become so impactful to me. And then I joined the second company. So I still remember the first face that I actually met at that company was actually Gui. So he was the one who opened the door for me when I came in for my first interview.
You actually remember that? Oh my god.
To be fair, I also remember who I first met when I joined on my first day. So I guess it's, but I don't remember opening the door for you. But I I agree with you. I also remember like who's the first person I met when the first day I joined the company. So yeah,
I think back then you were not engineering manager yet, but you already had the flair, you know.
wow,
flair.
Way to put it.
I felt like you were already in charge. Like I was like, he's the boss.
This guy is a boss, right? Boss man.
And then like, oh, he's just an engineer. Okay.
You will become my boss.
So because you were the one who actually greeted me and sit me down and then explain to me what the interview will be, blah, blah, blah. So the second company was impactful for me because of the play day policy. So what play day is actually, so if you have like a full week, like 5 day week, the Friday is actually not a working day. Wait, sorry, it's a working day, but then you don't actually work on product. You actually work on anything you want to work on. So for example, you want to take that opportunity to learn a new framework or a new best practice, or you want to improve the product's pipeline or something, or you can just read books or something like that. Yeah. So it's a 80-20.
A 20% innovation quota. Yeah.
I joined the company specifically because of Playdays. Yeah, I think that was really, really impactful. And I think I got what I came there for, because I think... I really made use of that time, I think, because slightly after I joined that company, I got married and then I got my first son also there. You know, you have a lot less time to actually play around with all this. Like, you want to improve your engineering skills, then you don't have much time anymore because you have other commitments, right? And then a specific time in your week just to do that is really, really impactful, I think. And also, also learning from the other people's posts, right? So other people is learning about other stuff and I'm learning my own stuff. So I post my stuff and then other people post their stuff and I learn from them. Unfortunately, there's not many people who actually share. I think Gui was also one of the more consistent ones.
Yeah, as boss man, I have to like set an example, right?
That's why I thought you were the boss. You are the one who are setting example. Or enough with like praising Gui. So sorry, I didn't praise you long.
Oh, do you want to talk about like UX chapter? To give long to some spotlight?
Right, actually that's true. This was also the place where I actually discovered another thing that I was passionate about, right? So like software engineering is one thing, but then...
There's a lot of disciplines inside software engineering, right? And one of them, like there's the security, there's like DevOps now and all that, right? Yeah.
So I remember when I first joined, I wanted to try ops a lot because I didn't get to do that when I was in my first company, because my first company was just doing front end and back end, but no ops. When I came to the second company, it was a true full stack, right? So you are dealing with ops, you're dealing with your continuous integration pipelines, you decide your delivery mechanism, process improvements, workflow, that like you even can change your own Jira board. So I get to experiment. So I went into ops and then I realized that I don't really want to go into ops really, because I just wanted to learn how to deploy. And then once I know a few stuff, like for example, I know ECS and then I know serverless, I felt like I'm done. So I don't really want to learn all that like Kubernetes and everything. I mean, if I have to learn that on like my next jobs, I will, but it's not my passion. I think my passion was... I discovered that when I was in that second company, and Long was actually the head of that chapter, which is the UX chapter. And I think UX was really my passion more than ops or backend development or even like front-end development. So I can be passionate about front-end development, but then nowadays front-end development also is very engineering-centric, right? You know, like frameworks like React or Vue or anything like that. But I'm not talking about that, although I'm also passionate about Vue and stuff. I think people know that by now. But I'm passionate about user experience. And I think in our former episode, like how passionate I was about like people not being able to use keyboard when submitting forms and everything like that, right? I learned about analytics a lot more here, like all those hard framework from Google. What else?
Design systems? Ring a bell? User personas?
Long, you need to rethink whether chapter is actually useful. Not that, not Afif forgotten.
The problem is, I haven't practiced that, to be honest. So my second company was that, and then my third company was a software house, and we had our own challenges, right? So I didn't get to do a lot of UX focused work. And then my fourth company, my current company right now, is actually a backend position. I still do UX studies outside of my work. So there is actually a UX focus team in my company that I'm gonna pursue in the future. But right now I'm in the team that's doing fully backend. And actually there's UX in there as well. Like whatever's interfacing the user, there's actually experience there, right? So yeah, but I do wish to go into, you know, like a more front end, more UX related role in the future. So if you're asking like, what's my 5-year plan? That's probably it. I actually tried to get front-end developer positions, but somehow it is hard. I'm not sure if it's because my resume has always been full stack and never, you know, fully front-end or something. I was actually looking at front-end positions first, but I couldn't get them. I'm not sure why. So I think it's probably because of my resume has been always full stack and not front-end specific. I don't know, if you guys are looking for front-end positions for your company, will you value front-end developers, like truly front-end developers resume, more than a full stack developer resume?
I mean, doesn't matter. Even when I did screening previously when I was a hiring manager, right, it didn't matter to me their experiences and also the education. For me, I pay more attention into detail, right? There are candidates that don't format their resume well and the spelling mistake all over, that's a big no for me. That tells me how much attention you pay. Especially if it's a CV or resume, you're sending this out to companies, if there's like a tons of spelling mistake, I'm gonna reject. But besides that, education and experience are usually secondary to me. It's because I rely more on our technical tests. But again, the technical tests we had weren't front-end specific, so I guess for me it's hard to judge.
I just want to like address the whether you, if it was up to me, whether I would hire someone specific focus on front end over someone who's full stack. I think it depends on the problem that you try to address with your hiring. Because we're engineers, right? We can always pick up new skills. And if you've proven you can pick up new skills, doesn't matter if you are full stack or you are specific for front end. But it depends on coming back to the problem, right? If the position you're hiring is something, so you need someone to be up and running like on the front end specific right away, you probably would prefer someone who's like already specific on front end versus someone who is full stack that needs some time to specialize on front end. But if it's not the immediate problem that you need to solve, you are willing to invest to give the time for the full stack engineer to go specialize in front end, I think yeah, that's not a problem to me. That's my perspective.
I agree with Long, it depends on the problem they want to solve by hiring. So if they're looking for someone to solve, for example, front-end web performance, they would want someone with more experience, because if the candidate has more experience, they will kind of be exposed to more things. So it's easier and they will have more knowledge on like, okay, what to tackle and how to solve these problems, right? So that could be one area.
Maybe I need like more projects on my portfolios or something that can showcase that.
I have a solution for you. It's a solution I've been telling another friend of ours, which is just start your own company and then you can give yourself whatever title you want.
Well, that's not wrong.
Senior front-end engineer. That's the real role I want.
Yeah, but that's my career. Still going on.
Anything you look forward to the future at this point in time?
Right. I've always wanted to build my own product and start my own company.
See?
Solutions.
Yes. And then I'll become senior front-end engineer. So, I mean, creating your product is easy for engineers, but marketing, distribution basically is the real problem. With
getting sales and having revenue is a separate problem.
You can build products, right? I think a lot of people can do that. Like nowadays, even like you can do no-code stuff.
Yeah, I think I recently saw this quote somewhere, like you can build very top-notch, good quality, excellent product anytime. But if people are not going to try that without marketing, they're not going to know that you have a top-notch, good quality product. Like that's where the role of marketing is.
That's also where user experience comes in, right? Like you want to figure out onboarding. You want to figure out like simplicity and want to figure out if it's inclusive. All these are user experience related. So I think that's probably why I'm more passionate towards that. So like my long-term goal is probably just creating my own product. And
promote yourself to a senior front-end engineer.
Yes.
Instead of CEO.
I'll hire a CEO and I'll become senior front end engineer.
Yeah, I mean, one summarizing thought about all this, we are still kind of still very used to build it and they will come kind of mentality. But with software being so prolific now, right, if you want to like do a new social media, for example, you have so many well-established competitors already. And even if you do a niche kind of area, I think niche area is a good place to explore, but there will be some sort of adjacent competitors as well. So that's where I can understand like marketing will be very useful in trying to help differentiate with all these competitors.
What's the least expected things that you came across from your career? Like most surprising thing?
Most surprising thing? Okay, so the most surprising thing that I found out. Okay, so first thing I think I covered earlier, right? The industry is really vast. There's a lot of things. Even though like I've been here 8 years, I have not experienced probably something that's really, really large scale, for example. I've worked with small to medium companies, I would say. Built small to medium apps. So I'm not sure yet how it will look like when I go into projects that are really, really, really big. Like, you know, hundreds of thousands of lines kind of code base. That's one thing. And then the other thing is probably the most pleasant engineers I've worked with are not the best ones. As in like not the most technically proficient ones. They are engineers who care. So they are engineers who care and also kind. For example, okay, in my first company, we had this proficient engineer. He realized that, so he was in the States and we are a Malaysian team, right? So he realized that one of our Malaysian engineers are doing something wrong. It's actually not in the PR stage yet. It's actually just a branch. So he actually go and pick into that branch. And then he looked at what the work in progress is. And then he realized that it's wrong. He went and opened the pull request for that guy and then trashed that guy in that progress. So he cares, but he's not nice. So he cares about the direction of the work, but he's not nice. And then there are also people who are nice, but they don't really care. So they just do their work and they don't really care if the process is okay, if the quality is okay, but they're nice. They you can make friends with them, but then they just do their work and whatever ticket they have, that's it. And they don't actually expand outside of that. Like think about the whole picture or the whole system. But then the ones that I've worked with that I want to work with again are people who actually care about not just their work, but also like things affecting other people's work.
Can I say it's like a respectful engineers who still care about the products and the engineering practices in general?
Yes. Yes.
That's not a 10x engineer.
Right. So basically they are just not 10x engineers. So, but no, but there are also nice engineers who don't really care, right? So, but then the ones that I've worked with, so for example, I had a junior, he's a junior engineer, but he really cares. Like he cares about process improvements, he cares about pipelines, he cares about deployments. I really want to work with him again.
Afif, you want to promote yourself? Then we can kind of wrap up the episode.
Promote myself? I have a YouTube channel that's very dusty.
Yeah, so when are you gonna stream more on YouTube?
I don't know when I'm going to dust off my YouTube channel, my blog.
Okay, no worries. We'll include the link somewhere.
Right, but yeah, I have a dusty YouTube channel. I have a dusty blog on dev.2. I have what else? But whatever I have is dusty.
Twitter? No, you're most active on Twitter.
Right. I am active on Twitter, but I'm not sure if like that's the best content distribution platform that I can. But there's something. Yeah, so my Twitter handle is Afif Ali. Disclaimer, that's a semi-professional account, or I guess mostly professional account. So most of the time it's like software engineering related tweets. It's mostly about me ranting about all these things like, you know, forms.
And sometimes there will be technical puns.
Right. I've not done that a lot. I should get back to my game.
Cool. I'll include all the links. So if people are interested, they can look up for you. Yeah, you want to do the outro as well, Afif?
Yeah, and don't let your copy overflow.
Yay.
Follow us on Twitter, Copy Overflow. We are on all major podcast platforms. That includes Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts. And we are also on Spotify. And you can catch it on YouTube as well. So that's it. Thanks to you, everybody. Bye.